We're back to the Neil Haley Show and also the media giant effect. And Dave, I told you, I keep rolling. It's not the new year yet. It's not 2023. And I'm ready for the new year. Are you ready, Dave?
I'm ready, willing, and able, yes.
Are you, why, Dave, is it we're so always excited about the next year? Why is it people this week just kind of say, oh, I'm planning for next year? Why don't we plan every week? Why don't we plan every day? I don't get this, right?
Yeah, sure. Ben, I live my life as if it was the last day of my life or the last month or the last year of my life. So I'm still alive. And so that means I got a whole nother year to live and do things that I would never consider doing because now I'm a narrower time frame, bucket list time.
Right. My client Gary Sirak, who wrote a book about how not to how the not how to retire and not die, which I love the title of it. Gary says basically a wish list. We all have to create a wish list. Well, my guest today is Mark Kluger, and he's an attorney, and I'm excited to learn about what he does because he represents the employers. Mark, thanks for stopping by, and you've been doing this for a while, right, Mark?
Yeah, I'm afraid to say the number out loud, but about 35 years.
35 years. What made you choose that side? Because as some people would say, because everyone looks to sue their employer, right? And in certain ways, why did you choose this side of law to practice?
With employment law, it's interesting. It's one of the rare areas where lawyers really do choose sides. And I think it came probably from the old days when most employers, or many employers, I should say, were unionized, and you either represented the unions or you represented the companies. So when I got into it, I really started my career in a corporate law firm, and our clients were corporate entities. So that's sort of how I started that way. And I started finding that there were a lot of frivolous litigations in employment law, and I felt like I was most comfortable on the side of the employer.
Very
Yeah,
interesting.
it's about time. You look on the internet, there's a zillion lawyers who are willing to represent employees, even if they're frivolous, and say, we can get you millions, and couple of my employees tried to sue me, but I'm a straight arrow, so I fought it. Most employees would just cave and say, write a check, make them go away. But no, I fought them and I won every time.
That's great. And Dave, let me just say this. If spending your last day on the earth with an employment lawyer is on your bucket list, I'm happy that we're together today.
And he's funny too.
No, see, the key thing is with attorneys is that what makes you different than your other attorneys that do the same thing as you do, Mark? Because this is an interesting always question. Because I mean, I talk to attorneys, I have to talk to business attorneys all the time. It's part of my having a business. And also I have to speak to other types of attorneys that Dave and I know, but we won't talk about. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what makes you different? Because you do have a sense of humor, and it's important to get along with the attorneys you hire. I don't care what it is. So, if you sound so corporate and boring, how can you really take the place? Because even though HR, the HR director or whoever you're serving has a heart, maybe they don't think they do, has a belief system, you have to kind of really develop that relationship, right, to make you different compared to your competitors.
Yeah, I mean that is one of the reasons, Neil, that I was attracted to employment law is because it's real life. It's you're not dealing with issues of debating where the comma goes in the contract, or how to interpret the specific language of a deal or an agreement. And it's really more what everyone experiences, everyone who works experiences, everyone who owns a business deals with. And so the human element of it is what attracted me to it. And my approach to it is a practical one. Any lawyer can read the book and tell you what the law says. The unique way in which I like to approach it is to try and come up with solutions that work for employers and obviously stay within the guardrails of the law. But at the same time, understand that it's that people who are running a business need boots on the ground. They need their employees at work. And there have been an awful lot of employment laws passed in the last decade around the country, both state and federal, that make it more and more difficult to run businesses. And so I have to look at the perspective of my clients and how to get people in the door and stay there.
It's part of the culture of judges and government elected officials. They are anti-business. And I'm in the gas station business, so they're anti-fossil fuel. It's like everyone is against me. And it's refreshing to have an attorney who actually wants to, you know, a good attorney who wants to represent the employer. God bless you.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't hear that often, but it's
I told you we'd have a different type of interview, Mark. I just said, you know, that's what's so about me. And I, that's what I get the feedback all the time is, Neil, you have a conversation with your guests. You don't, even though I ask good journalistic questions at times, I try to have a conversation relationship like we're having a beer or having wait to VAR and AR. We're going to pretend that we could have a beer and taste the beer, Dave. Are you ready for that when we have the virtual glasses on and the media giant will have them on and we'll all have them on and we'll be like we're sitting right next to each other and we're sitting and feeling coffee and we're going to feel that coffee and feel even shaking someone's hand. Are you ready for that, Dave?
Sure. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's called HR Employment Law Newsletter. And some of the things I read in here is like, I can't believe it. What employees are suing their employers for, especially, you know, COVID related and now marijuana. I mean, are we allowed to test our employees for marijuana? Because marijuana stays in your blood system for so long and it's legal everywhere, but nobody wants their employees coming to work high.
Right. I mean, it's the change in the marijuana laws has really come as the way it's impacted employers has really come as a shock to most of my clients. And I'm sure to you too, Dave, as a business owner. It's, you know, one of those things I think we all, you know, growing up in the era in which I think the three of us did, we all sort of got used to the fact that somebody tested positive for a drug, they were out the door. And that was that. But with the marijuana laws, I think that employers really have to start thinking about marijuana the way we think about alcohol, right? You can't be drunk at work. We've always known that. That's at least most of us.
Yeah, but you can give them a breathalyzer or something, you know?
Or you can smell it on their breath. And so it is much more difficult, obviously, to tell if somebody is quote unquote impaired by marijuana at work, because that's still not legal to be impaired. But in the same way, it's not... it's, you know, not okay to be impaired by a narcotic that's prescribed by a doctor, especially depending on the nature of your job. You drive a forklift and you've taken, you know, three Percocet before you came to work because of your bad back. You're not going to be qualified to do the job and the employer better get you out of there. So with marijuana, I agree with you, Dave. It stays in the system a really long time. So if you suspect someone's impaired, you send them for a drug test, they test positive, doesn't necessarily mean that they have imbibed in the last 24 hours.
What about the problem with the federal government still hasn't condoned marijuana? It's technically still illegal, and the states and the feds haven't really resolved that. Does that give us any rights saying, well, the feds said it's illegal, so I'm letting you go?
It's really a fascinating dichotomy that I don't think we've seen in any other area of the law. Marijuana is still a Schedule I drug under the federal criminal drug laws. So in theory, anyone, including in a state in which it is legal for recreational purposes, and obviously many more states in which it's legal for medicinal purposes, could technically be prosecuted under federal law for possession and or sale. But there has been this unspoken, or maybe it has been spoken, but just not to the public, sort of truce between the Justice Department and the state governments, in which the Justice Department has essentially told the local U.S. attorneys, we're not prosecuting marijuana crimes. And that's it.
So I would lose that employment law case that I fired somebody because they tested positive for marijuana.
Well, it depends. In certain states like New Jersey, Colorado, New York, soon to be, there is going to have to be a combination of variables for the termination to be upheld. One is objective signs of impairment coupled with a reasonable suspicion drug test in which the person tests positive. But the flip side to that is pre-employment drug testing. And in that area, most of the states which have legalized it for recreational purposes have basically said it's not legal to refuse to hire someone who tests positive on a pre-hire drug test. And that's really where the disconnect is, or where, you know, it becomes counterintuitive to many employers. Somebody tests positive pre-employment, you're saying, I'm knowingly hiring somebody who has tested positive for a drug that is, you know, criminally illegal under federal law. And the answer is certainly in New Jersey, New York, California, Colorado, the answer is tough luck. You can't refuse to hire that person for that purpose, you know, for that reason.
All right, well, let's get back. Neil's got some questions for you.
No, Dave, these are great. You made it exciting as we're almost finishing up our interview. But I think that ultimately at the end of the day, Mark, is what you're doing is you're here for the employer, which everyone would consider you to be the bad guy. How do you live as the bad guy? And especially you're one of those probably only attorneys out there that's going out and doing media, because you are considered the bad guy to a lot of people in this country who don't like the employer. They're anti-corporate, they're anti-establishment, boss, job, the way society sees things. How do you live as the bad guy?
Well, I live as the bad guy because it really is, in my view, my responsibility to educate my clients as to what the law is and help them uphold the law in their workplaces. And when I see a discrimination case, obviously that's the most typical litigation that we see, discrimination based on, you name it, right? Age, race, gender, sexual orientation, all of those types of cases are the types that we litigate and defend employers in. And certainly, no employment lawyer that I know from my side of the tracks, the employer side, condones any form of discrimination. Discrimination, when it happens, is an awful thing. But the problem is so many of the cases, and that's what Dave alluded to, are not genuinely based on discrimination, but rather somebody falls into a category or a classification of a protected class, but uses that protected class as an excuse for the fact that they were terminated for legitimate reasons. They weren't performing well. So in my view, when I defend a case that I know is frivolous and isn't based on genuine discrimination, I feel like what I'm doing is upholding the law, which is there for those people who are genuinely mistreated at work. And the numbers of those people pale in comparison to those who actually bring suits.
Right. And what types of people do you work with? Bigger firms? I mean, I'm talking bigger corporate companies, or do you work with small businesses as well?
So I have a firm comprised of 8 lawyers. We all do the same type of work, and we all just represent employers. And our clients range from employers with 20 employees to employers with 250,000 employees.
Okay, wow. Okay, so it varies for sure. All right, Dave. Dave's last question is a caregiving question, Mark, and this is an interesting one that might have a feeling where you might hear caregiving in a case that you've had to deal with. But go ahead, Dave, with your question.
Yeah, just like everybody knows someone going through cancer, everybody knows a caregiver. I became one 25 years ago. My wife had a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed. We almost broke up. The grief process was awful. But we hung in there. We reinvented ourselves. Our love was rekindled. And now I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I'm trying to help other caregivers not go through the same thing I went through. And so, written books, spoken on TV, spoken on stages. But my latest thing now is helping caregivers to get away to Acapulco. I have access to this villa in a millionaire section of Acapulco. And it unfortunately, it's expensive to get them there. So I'm also asking, wealthy donors who have a heart for caregiving to donate, save a caregiver's life. 30% of them die before their loved ones do. And so that's what I'm doing right now, helping caregivers to get away and to survive. It's a coaching program. It's a mastermind. When's the last time you had a caregiver experience, or maybe you're going through something right now?
On a personal level, you're asking?
Sure. Or yeah, or someone in the family, parents,
yeah, so,
grandparents.
Yeah, well, my parents are elderly. You know, my brother and I have worked together very well in keeping track of them. Some, you know, lots of different types of physical ailments, as well as memory loss issues. You know, I certainly sympathize with anyone who goes through that alone, first of all. My brother's a great team player, so he and I balance each other very well. But yeah, it's certainly something. Obviously, as the population continues to age, and there, you know, the pharmaceutical and medical professional come up with more and more ways to keep us alive longer, I think that more of us go through this with parents probably more than any other.
Sure, and there's lots of caregivers out there who have means to you know, send a loved one to get a recharged on a Acapulco, for example. But unfortunately, the vast number of them are really poor. They're broke. They can't afford it. The ones who need it the most can't afford it. That's why I'm trying to get donors to, you know, help these guys out. Government needs to get involved. I mean, there's so many people that need to get involved in helping caregivers, because we're saving the medical industry billions and billions of dollars.
Based on the percentages, Mark, as Mark knows, and I know, and you know, Dave, the percentage of people that are becoming baby boomers every month, 30,000 of them, it's going to be, and the biggest, highest per economic income is people who are 60 and older, 70% of the country. So you're really looking at most of the wealth is older. So you're going to see a change, Dave, as we keep seeing more and more people get older, that everything is going to have to conform to the elderly if our society is going to continue as a society.
It's a tsunami. It's a tsunami on the horizon. It's like Social Security. More people are pulling out now than they're taking in. That's a problem. Well, there's more people who need caregivers and need care, need facilities, than there are available. What are we going to do about it?
Then that's going to be government. They're going to have to come up with that for sure. And Mark is fighting for employers. So if you're a company and you're dealing with anything with an employee, or even probably someone who is not just employees, but they could be suing them. It also could be people 1099 and stuff, right, Mark? It's not... Yeah. Be any type of, if you've employed somebody and they're trying to sue you, Mark's the guy to give a call. So where's the best place to connect, Mark, for people?
Well, we have a website, www.klugerhealy.com, and Healy is Healey. We're in New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and we can also be reached at 973-307-0800.
All right, we appreciate it.
You represent small employers also, mom and pop, you know, don't have 250,000 employees.
Absolutely.
See that Mark's going everywhere, but there might not be lots of people that want to represent, as I said, people think the bad guy. But Mark, you're a good
That
guy.
Means he has no competition.
Yes, exactly. That's good. But Mark's.
I wish.
Mark's like, no, that's not the case. That's why he's on this show. I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for stopping by.
Pleasure meeting you guys.
All right. You're listening and watching me. The Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.